Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mark Rosa joins us, professor of finance at UNO, my alma mater, and our friend. Happy New Year, Mark.
And to you, sir. How are you?
Good. I tried to check my 401k before, and it said something about the call being rerouted to Belize. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, Tommy, you and I have talked about your investment strategy. Yeah. I just can't get my hands around it. You're all over the place. I don't
bet
know what to
bet red. That's my investment strategy, Mark. Bet red. Seriously, what was 2019 like in terms of the economy, in terms of growth for people's 401k, job sector, et cetera?
You know, Tommy, it's interesting you say that. They hit a article in the Wall Street Journal just last week, and they were talking about just that the year started off, the Fed kept reminding us it was going to keep increasing interest rates, and that was contrary to what the bond markets or the stock markets were interested in hearing. So it was a shaky beginning. And of course, on the political side, we had a lot of just keep sparring with China about the trade imbalances and these tariffs and all those types of things. So I don't think it started off that well, worrying about those things. And then as the year progressed, it got better and better. And we ended up on the indexes. It was a 20% up year for like the S&P 500 and the Dow with some change. And every now and then you get those. Do I think it's going to repeat that for 2020? That would be a tall order for it to come up another 20% over last year's 20%. But it just reminds us that trying to time the market, had we tried to do that in the beginning of last year, people would have run for shelter and a lot of cash started to accumulate on the sidelines, and they missed a wonderful year. Missed a great year for the market averages, great year to have invested in stocks, and that would have gone by the wayside had people tried to time it. So when we were coming across, and I know I'm moving around a little bit, coming into the summer, a lot of these things started clearing up, and the Fed took action. They lowered interest rates three consecutive months, and within that, they promised no rate increases for all of 2020. So that really gave us a boost starting around August and finishing up at the end of the year to go into January. And I think that's just good news. I think we have all the makings of a wonderful economy. The GDP could be growing a little bit faster. It's about 2.1%. So that'd be nice if it was a little bit stronger than that, but I'm not complaining. Very low unemployment, a very efficiently running economy. Interest rates or the cost of money is low. And that's why you see equity values where they are now. The stock market responded in kind. Don't forget the tax cuts that were made. You know, it's controversial, but within this administration, they made those tax cuts so business has more money to invest. It's hard to get much better than this.
You said timing's everything, and obviously it's that way in life. But for people that chose to stay on the sidelines last year, I think the thought process, correct me if I'm wrong, is nothing's going to last forever, right? So you got to take your gains while you can without suffering the losses. But with all that being said, when you look at, I guess, the figures for the country, the economic figures, when you try to predict the future, are we in any type of bubble right now, or have whatever steps that were needed after 2008 been taken? What would the state of the economy be now as opposed to then, and are we vulnerable for anything like that to happen again?
From 2008?
Well, I guess that was a crash, right, 2008?
Yeah. Well, okay, and I guess you're referring back to that. We had the real estate bubbles that were going on when people kept refinancing their mortgages to take out the equity.
With the no-doubt
housing
loans,
prices
right.
were going. But that's it. And that was a, government-engineered mess, and that's what we got. I'm not seeing that right now. I'm not seeing – the only thing that's a little bit disturbing is we keep running a deficit to the extent that most anyone would say that's not sustainable. But it keeps rolling. People have an appetite for it. The government has an appetite for it. The investment arena has an appetite for it. So it's like, I don't know when that bill will start coming due or what it looks like. No one does, because it seems like a lot of countries around the world continue to do that. And it continues to be an appetite for the paper, meaning people are investing in it. People are buying it. People are investment houses are loaning money to the government. They're at low interest rates, but there's a whole swath of people on and investing in corporation that needs that risk-free paper, so they keep buying it. So I'm not, going back to what you were saying, from a bubble standpoint, I'm not seeing where that is manifesting itself. If the unemployment rate started rising or business investment started falling with significance, and the stock market kept going up, well, then that's the disconnect. But we're not seeing that through the major economic indicators. You're right; it's not going to last forever. Could we say, well, what if the market goes up, S&P 500 or the Dow, 6, 7, 8, 9% this year? I think that's a fantastic rate of return on the back of being up 20 this past year. The lesson continues to be learned, Tommy, about, just investing for the long term, unless you're not, meaning I need the money sooner than the long term. I'm retiring in 2 or 3 years. Well, that changes the equation. You should start rotating yourself out of equities. You could still have money in equities, but we might have some more fixed incomes, some things that are less volatile, because you certainly will have the business cycle hasn't been repealed. So we will have business cycles going forward, peaks and troughs. So if you're a long-term investor, as most of us could be, you just, systematically putting money in, 401k, like you mentioned, IRA. I did my IRA contribution yesterday. I moved some money first thing in the new year, get that money in a sheltered position. Same thing with 401k, other retirement plans. And we're at all-time record highs now on the averages, and some would say, "Well, it's at a record high." Well, we keep breaking these records and keep going forward, and as long as the economy holds together with the usual economic indicators holding fast, the low unemployment, good business investment, low cost of funds, we just have to keep vigilant, keep our eye on it, and I think 2020. Is at a good place to perform well.
So what could, Mark, or what would have to happen for all of this to unravel?
Well, a reversal of what we have. If rates started moving up, that's all bets are off.
The Fed controls
raising rates. That's right. And we're not seeing that. Government investment to fall off. I wouldn't see that either. Now, you've got the geopolitical, if the tariff nonsense keeps going on, that usually doesn't – the markets don't like that because they don't want that uncertain an outcome. The other part, it's an election year. So you've got crazy things happening with all the rhetoric that's going on with people running for office. Could that change things if some of the politicians that are running for president – they have the most unusual financial ideas I've ever seen. The deficits would explode. Talked about, everything is paid for, all of the student loans are forgiven, Medicare for everybody. I don't know how those things get accomplished economically if they were attempted. So that is scary. That could derail market averages.
Along those lines, Mark, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, but first of all, it seems to me the market has been remarkably resilient to uncertainty. Agree or disagree?
It has been of late. I would agree with you. And that's proven out by the current state of the market averages. They keep hitting highs. So they have been resilient. But we've not been dealt with anything that I think they would think they couldn't handle. And that's why it's been resilient.
So in terms of things unraveling, et cetera, if the Fed controls that in terms of interest rates, why would they want to see it unravel? Or what, how, you understand, I mean, we can take a break here and, yeah, and you can try to make sense of what it is I'm saying. No, we're not taking a break here.
Well, no. To answer your question, no break?
No, we're not. We're not okay. Taking a break.
All right, that's fine. Well, did they? That's what where they were going at the a year ago. That's where they were going. They were saying, well, the economy is growing too fast, so we need to put the brakes on and start raising rates, make money incrementally more expensive, and you and I borrow less. Well, that'll slow the economy down. Well, the bond market pitched a fit, and the financial markets. And it was, what are you talking about? The economy isn't growing too fast. You're overreacting. Inflation is very tame. If anything, you ought to consider lowering rates. So Jerome Powell did. He considered that. That was late last year, late in 18. And then they started evaluating it in the spring to lower rates in the summer. That's what happened. It was very accommodating in that regard, and there wasn't anything out there to keep raising rates. And they saw that.
In terms of it being an election year and some of the different economic policies that have been put forth by some of the candidates, and we'll leave it at that. In terms of the market, though, and uncertainty, there's a long way between promising this and having this done, right? So would that be an immediate reaction, or would the market have a, well, let's wait and see if this becomes reality, et cetera?
I think you'd have something at the fringe. People would react immediately because some of the policies being brought forth, it would just depend on who wins the election if it's not the current administration and what their ideas are. But the crushing, in some of them are just proposing crushing tax rates. And it's it would just completely almost eliminate anybody's incentive. U.S. is so known for its innovation, and we have such a thriving economy, the largest in the world. And it came about because we have the type of economy we have, meaning a capitalistically oriented economy. People are incented to invent a company like Amazon, and you're rewarded handsomely. Well, some of the people trying to get the nomination, they don't feel that way. And it would just be a very confiscatory tax approach to that, wealth taxes and things that we've seen it across the world. They don't work. They wouldn't work here. It would be a god-awful mess. But like you're saying, it would have to get through Congress. It would have to be approved accordingly. But it's just scary to have those types of programs even discussed.
Tell me why economically, because I'm getting some text here. And look, I understand the healthcare issue from a personal standpoint, and I understand that everybody needs healthcare. Everybody should have it. But as proposed economically, what would happen if something like that were to get through, where all student loans were forgiven? What else were we talking about there? Free tuition for everybody, health care for everybody. Yeah. That would result in a massive deficit increase, which would then massively increase the debt. And as a result, manifest itself in terms of uncertainty in the market. And then walk us through it, if you will. And I'm trying to leave the politics out of this. But just in terms of the numbers, the balance sheet, whatever, Mark, if something like that were to happen, what would the effect on the economy be?
Well, and therein lies the issue, because what is being looked at more and more with some of these, especially the politicians, but even the financial people are saying, well, it used to be, back when you and I were in undergrad 100 years ago, it used to be the same. Well, you can never borrow so much money where it equals the GDP. Interest rates would be through the roof. I mean, the government would be soaking up all the available funds. It's called a crowding out argument, that they would crowd out all other investment. They would have such a demand on any money available that they would be borrowing it, that the cost of money would rise to these stratospheric levels. Well, you fast forward to today, and here we are. We're at our debt level at 22 to 23 trillion is basically as big as the economy. So we're at 100%. And none of those things are happening. Interest rates are at remarkably low levels. Inflation is very low. The economy is humming. Unemployment is low. Economic efficiency, largely due to advances in technology, has done well to keep inflation low, has done well to keep unemployment low. And all these things are, well, maybe the deficit doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. So let's add $10 trillion real fast. It's just, now that Washington talks about trillions like you and I talk about lunch money, and it's all these things. Well, let's forgive everybody. I think it's just dumb public policy, first of all, to say we're just going to, quote, forgive everybody student loans. I've read articles, some people are saying, why don't you just forgive everybody's home loans and my credit cards and buy everybody a car? And I don't know what the point of all that would be. Why do they single out the student loans?
It would be fun, Mark. It would be fun.
It would be a blast for some people.
It would be a paradise. Mark, I appreciate your time as always. We're going to talk to you a lot during the year because finance is very important for everybody that listens to the station. And Mark's talking about lunch money. I don't know, he and I eat lunch at vastly different places, so maybe lunch money for me, not for him. We'll be back talking about internet security, WWL. Thank you, Mark.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.